It's that time on a Thursday when we look to the north for answers. This time he goes Dexter Fowler. He's our leadoff hitter. You can find his work for Comcast Sportsnet online, CSNNW.com. He's talking Ducks with Joey and Anthony and Jordan. Channel 737 on my Xfinity system. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how you doing today, sir?
Mr. Fentress is a little irritated right now.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, I just went and bought some kitty litter, and it just dawned on me that we spend about $80 a month on cat litter. Now, think about this for a minute. We have two cats. We're basically paying money to facilitate bowel movement and urination relief for a cat.
Wow. With all that's going on in your life, podcast, covering this team, kids, a homeowner, your job, this is what you're focused on.
Well, because I literally just got in my car. I was racing. I had to go to the post office and then run and grab some tea litter before you called. I literally got in my car and started right when you called, and it's just fresh on my mind because I'm looking at the receipt.
Wow.
There's something weird about that. These cats need to get a damn job. Anyway, go ahead.
All right. Well, I don't know if cats actually work as mascots, but as they say, I'll keep an ear open for you.
I appreciate it.
Oh, by the way, this week my Comcast DVR, I woke up on Tuesday. You guys did the show Monday? Is this a new time, or has this been about the bye and the Friday game? For folks who catch the show, when exactly are you on now?
Well, we can't be on the same night the Blazers are playing, and they opened up Tuesday night. And then I think we just went ahead and just moved it to Monday for the rest of the season. So we'll be Monday night, 7 o'clock from here on out.
All right. I was a little bit confused. You know, I've been known to have a glass of wine. I get up the next day. I see what's in my queue, and I was like, did I miss a day? Is it the 80s again? Oh, man, that's beautiful. All right, so Tuesday night, Cubbies in their first World Series game in 71 years. Couldn't solve Corey Kluber. But Arrieta last night was just enormous, just dominating. So now that you get the split, Hendricks has been terrific. He throws tomorrow night. What's your confidence level that this thing could end after 108 years?
Well, Kluber was amazing. He had the Cubbies handcuffed. But I believe if he's going to pitch 4 and 7, which is the plan, the Cubs are good. They're not going to lose to him 3 times. There's no way. They're going to figure him out. Plus, he's going to be tired. He's not going to be as great. He's not going to be able to go as deep. They almost broke through against him and Miller the other night. Just couldn't close the deal. They had bases loaded. But their pitching depth, the Cubs' pitching depth is just way better than Cleveland's. I knew they were going to light up. Not light up. I knew they'd get to Trevor Bauer, and they did. I feel good about them going against Cleveland's number 3 guy.
Yeah, Tommy.
Exactly. I mean, he's doesn't throw very hard at all, which means I think the Cubs will hit at least 2 home runs off of him. No, I feel good. I feel like, you know, to me, the Cubs are flat out the better team all the way around. Their lineup is just ridiculous. I'm feeling good. But, you know, like I've told you, I've suppressed my angst because they're so good, so young. This is not going to be, you know, the first or last time during the hunt for this thing in the next 5 years. So I feel good, but if they were to somehow lose a great series, I'd be upset, but I wouldn't be devastated.
Now, I saw what you posted pre-game 1. You had the Cub hat, the Cub jersey, and the World Series score sheets. We went nuts.
Yep.
Did you actually keep score?
I did for both games.
Nice. Wow.
And if I missed something, I rewound to see how a guy got out. Was it a ground out? Was it a pop out? I missed it. I'll go back. If I was distracted by something like a kid, I'd have laid down the law with my kids. I was like, look, no shenanigans. This isn't the Bears. You know, this isn't the Bulls in the middle of a season. This is the World Series. And, of course, they have no idea why this is such a big deal. They know I like them. They know it's the World Series. But they don't understand the 108 years thing because they're like 12 and 10. So for them, it's like, you know. You know, I jumped up and cheered a home run. And my daughter was like, you act like you're on the team. I'm like, well, I am. As far as I can be, I got the jersey and hat on. I'm on the team right now. Sit down and shut up.
Well, first of all, and I don't have to tell you, keeping score, I'm sure for millennials is like, would they even know who won 9 and what a backwards K even meant? I mean, that's a lost art, man.
And I had to put down a lot of backwards K's in that first game. I was not happy. But no, it's nothing keeps you more in tune to a game than actually keeping. So I don't keep balls in strikes, but, you know, watching it like that. And then when they come back up again, you know, it's right there in front of you. Oh, yeah, Fowler struck out first time, line to center the next time. You know, it's right there in front of you. So it's a lot of fun. I only do it for something like this.
No,
I
don't
do it during the regular season.
That was a thing of beauty. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Talking with Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sportsnet. Okay, let's get to Oregon football. So,
do we have to?
After,
oh wait, that's the only reason you have me on. I forgot.
Well, in theory, I have you on as a rep of Comcast talking Ducks. But once you're here, okay. It's up to us. So after Washington, there was kind of this theory of players, former players. You even had Cam Hunt and Schooler chiming in. Attitude, they're not playing hard. And then, of course, they had a horrible first half against Cal. And the bottom line is they responded. So can we lay this, guys don't care, they're not listening to the coaches talk, and actually focus on the games?
Yeah, my take on this whole thing and piecing everything together is this. You know, they came in with a relatively young and inexperienced team, you know, with a lot of guys who just were not proven at a high level. They lacked some leadership from the juniors and seniors. And so when things went south and you have a bunch of young men who are used to being, you know, successful, thought they were coming to Oregon to compete for championships every year, you know, young men have a tendency to start, you know, it's not my fault. It's not my problem. You know, or they get a bad attitude and they start thinking, I should have gone somewhere else. Or they start thinking about they're going to transfer. I mean, that's just what kids do everywhere, not just at Oregon. And I think some of that was going on, and I think that irritated some people. And then there are some people who just weren't doing their jobs fully. They weren't understanding that this is another level. You can't take plays off. You can't have bad technique as a defensive back and then just recover because you're covering a guy who runs a 5-1-40 and has no chance of playing college football. He's just playing high school football because he likes football. You can't do that at the next level. You have to have your footwork down to the step, you know, at everything you do. And so guys weren't as focused on that. That led to the team meeting where they call each other out. You're not doing your job. You're not focused. You're not this. You're not that. And then they go out and get spanked by Washington State, and then they get blown out by Washington. And Cameron Hunt says what he said. Now I believe them. I don't. You know, when Helfrich came out and said it's not true that players don't care, I'm not going to say there were players who didn't care, but I think there were players who were acting like they didn't care as a defense mechanism for the fact that they were getting their heads kicked in. That's what people do. A lot of people do that. I don't care. Your girlfriend breaks up with you. What was the first thing you ever did? I don't care. Forget her.
She didn't mean that much to me anyway.
She broke up with me. You act like you don't care, right? It's the same thing with athletes when they're getting their heads kicked in. So I think some of that was going on. Now, based on what came out Friday night from like Tony Brooks James and Hoke and Jaylen Brown was that Helfrich, over the bye week, supposedly did a great job of reeling in some of those guys who maybe, you know, were not displaying the proper attitudes and the men of Oregon competitive attitude that they want, getting the group back together saying, hey, you know, look, we're struggling. We can still be better. We have to work together. We have to fight through this as a unit. And I think we saw evidence of that on Friday. Yes, they lost, but I don't think anyone can say that this team quit that night or that the coaches have lost this team. If they had lost this team and there were a bunch of quitters on this team, if people didn't care, that 21-0 would have become 65-21 in a heartbeat. Easily could have become that, and it did not. They came out in the second half. The defense started making plays. The offense picked it up, and they rallied and had a chance to win it. And after they – and here's the other thing, too. They were devastated when they lost.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, it was like, wow. I did not see any evidence of guys being like, I don't care. It was more like, man, you know, we really fought for this. You know, we did the best we could, and we still lost. But I think that's just where this team is. And I know people are freaking out there and want to know how it got to this point. But, you know, in a nutshell, they blew it in some areas in recruiting. And that left them in a situation where they're going pretty young and inexperienced right now. But, man, when you're young and inexperienced and losing, the silver lining is always that the guys are going to learn from it, grow up, and be better. And I guarantee next year's team. I said, coming into the season, I said 2017.
You did.
Not 2016.
You did.
Guarantee they're going to be better next year. And then in 2018, I mean, think like on defense, you know, they're playing freshmen. They've got redshirt freshmen getting in there, and they've got a group of kids who are redshirting. So you got three lines of guys there who are going to be so much better next year and the year after that I think that there's reason to believe that they're going to upturn. It's just a question of whether or not someone's going to get a wild hair up their backside and just blow the whole thing up, fire the whole staff. Then you might have to start over.
Now, folks need also to check out the podcast with Bree Amaranthus, CSNNW.com, Aaron's Twitter feed. I bring that up, and David Yost is your guest this week. But you had a very interesting call on Talking Ducks after two starts, along what you said about growing pains and what the future might hold. Your crystal ball is telling you some interesting things about what we could expect from Justin Herbert, I understand.
I know I'm out of control with this stuff, but no, I firmly believe this. So here's my track record. In 2005, I said Clemens was going to be top 10 Heisman, which wasn't that grandiose of a deal, but people mocked me and laughed at me. And he was headed there. He was going to be a finalist for the Unitas Award, but he broke his leg. So there's no way he wasn't going to be top 10 that year. I said in 2005 that Dixon was contender for the Heisman. In 2007, I got laughed and mocked for 2 years about that. Then, of course, 2007, he had it in his hands. He blew out his knee. So maybe I'm a jinx. I started thinking at the time, you know, I think I'm just jinxing these guys. But then in 2012, I kind of went out there, and, you know, and this to me was not a big deal. I'm not patting myself on the back for this one. The Clemens and Dixon thing were more of outliers. But, you know, I said, hey, this guy's going to be a Heisman finalist in 2014. Of course, he won it. So now I'm looking at Herbert, and, you know, I don't believe this is even a stretch at all because he is a complete monster when you look at everything he has going for him. You know, first of all, the uncommon height with the addition of being able to move the way he does.
Yep.
He's not super quick like Dixon or Mariota were, where, you know, his start's great, but once he gets rolling, he can run. And he's going to put on some more pounds to that frame. He's going to be a big 6'6". You know, he's going to be a big, imposing guy who's nimble and can move. And then I love the way he slides around the pocket so naturally for a true freshman, the way he can move away from pressure. The way, like the touchdown pass to Nelson, where he looked left to the slant with Carrington, came back to the middle, and then came back to the right. The way he hopped his feet to move over his footwork, and then just gunned that ball low and outside, where only his guy could get it, whizzed it past the linebacker. That's big time stuff for a true freshman to be doing that. Granted, Cal's defense not good at all. We all know this, so you have to take it a little bit with a grain of salt. But he didn't throw three touchdowns against a bad Cal defense. He threw six.
Right.
So he did what you would expect an elite-level quarterback to do against that type of defense, light it up. And he did that. The other thing, the most impressive thing, and this is why I'm going on a limb saying Heisman candidate and first-round pick is not just the talent, because a lot of guys have talent. But, dude, for him to go out, for me, the Washington game, they were coming after him, they were getting their butts handed to them, and he didn't blink.
Nope. It was awesome.
Did not blink. Did not care. Like, I mean, not that he didn't care about losing, but, like, he wasn't affected by it. And then the Cal game, they're down 21-0. They're down 34-14. He's struggling. I even at 21-0, I was like, you know what, they might have to get the code in there. I don't know if he's up for the challenge. Whoops, next drive, he drives down and scores a touchdown. He carries them back. They take the lead, throws a touchdown in overtime. I mean, again, did not blink. And the number one thing I heard about him coming out of camp when people were comparing him to Marcus, it wasn't necessarily just on talent. It was on that unflappableness that he has, where he's just unfazed. And someone told me before the Washington game, they said, hey, we might lose, but I don't think Washington is going to impact him mentally. I don't think they're going to get to him and he's going to fold. I'm like, really? But they're like, yeah. So I'm thinking to myself, true freshman starting against the Huskies, the best defense maybe in the nation, he's got to get impacted somehow. But nope, he didn't. So when you factor all those things together, I just can't see how he fails. Now, injuries could happen. You never know when those kind of things can happen. We saw, you know, Dixon and Clemens, but I just think the sky's the limit for him. And I think this also destroys the mythology that this coaching staff can't identify, recruit, and develop a quarterback, because this guy, when it's all said and done, is going to be one of the greatest that ever played Oregon.
And all we got to do
and
is...
Scene.
And all we have to do is avoid the Fentress jinx, and we're off and rolling.
Right, exactly.
I heard you guys talking about Royce Freeman. And, you know, you look at the numbers from Cal was one thing, but I went a step further. You throw that 22-yard run against the Huskies out. His last 25 carries have generated 38 yards. Something's not right there. What are you hearing? And if he can't be out there 100%, be Royce Freeman, should he be out there?
You know, I was told before the Cal game that he was – not even 80%.
Oof.
And that he had a bruised sternum. So that's tough to play with because, I mean, I don't know if anyone's just had it you know, just any type of getting hit in the sternum can cause you to, like, you know, double over. I don't know if that's worse than getting hit in the man parts or not, but it's close. And so to have a bruise situation, that's tough. And then, you know, we all know he had the leg situation. He came back from that, but who knows if that's completely 100%. He clearly was not himself. You know, my hunch is that he's such a gamer and he wants to be out there that he's going to try and that they're going to try. And I imagine he would be healthier this week than he was last week. But, you know, I clearly believe that if he's not 100% and he clearly can't give them what they need, that they'll have no hesitation to go to Tony Brooks James, who will be your lead back next year and be a 1,200-yard guy.
Talking with Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sportsnet. As for the defense, I think one of the guys, maybe it was Anthony, tried to use the term mixed bag, which was kind of optimistic. And then one of the guys said they're used to playing with a lead, so you got to hold the offense accountable. But when you evaluate this defense, then you got to kind of count for everything and the fact that when the offense has come back in those two games, they gave them the lead and they blew it.
Yeah, I mean, look, the offense has not been perfect. There's no doubt about that. But they're still top three in the conference. And if they're scoring 40 points a game and getting, you know, 500 yards a game, you only need your defense to be average. I mean, just average. To me, this 2-5 record falls mostly on the defense by far. They're giving up 43 points. They're, what, 128th in the nation in total defense, 530 yards a game, I think, and then 43 points is 127th and 126th. That's next level atrociousness.
Like, sure is.
Like you're almost better. Like that could be a situation where maybe on fourth down you do go for it or you do kick onside kicks because your defense is going to get scored on anyway. You might as well take a chance that one of your times you're going to get the ball and get an extra possession and win that way. I mean, I'm half kidding when I say that. Like, why kick off? Because they're just going to score anyway. Onside kick, if you get it, hey. If you don't get it, well, they have a shorter field. They'll score quicker. You get the ball quicker. You get more possession. It's awful. And They're too young, too inexperienced, no leaders, no proven talent. There's not one legitimate big-time experienced playmaker on that defense. Not one. Not one single player has experience/impact ability right now. Troy Dye is going to have it. He's going to be great, but he's still a true freshman. You know, it's just they should be – if that defense were just merely bad, not hideous, I think they'd be 4-3 right now. You know,
that's a good point.
I mean, it's just not – I can't say any more about it. And I'm not trying to be mean, but the numbers are what they are.
All right, and finally, you mentioned Herbert facing not only the best defense in the conference, but one of the best two or three in the country, then a lesser group in Cal. So now ASU, it's kind of an odd defense. He kind of tries to cause chaos. You wrote about it. You know, I guess what kind of challenges is Herbert going to face this week against this group of Sun Devils?
Yeah, they're gonna mess with him, and they're gonna mess with the heads of the young offensive line. And I think they'll have some success doing that. They got to Luke Falk last week 7 times, sacked him. That they got 2 of the best sackers in the conference. They I think they lead the conference with 23 sacks. That's in just over half a season. So I imagine them getting, you know, a handful of sacks on Herbert, but they're also gonna give you big plays. And this is gonna be a big. This should be a game where Darren Carrington, you know, has a huge day, because if he gets 1-on-1 on somebody, the variety of throws you can make to him. He can go get it, back shoulder phase or just, you know, slant or just throw it up or what have you. It's going to be a great outlet for Herbert. They're going to get one-on-one situations. I think they're going to call things to try and isolate him one-on-one with people. And like I said, we talked about earlier, Herbert is unflappable. So even if he gets hit a couple of times, even if he makes a couple of mistakes, ASU is going to keep giving you opportunities because they're gambling. They're going to hope that they can get to you more times than you can beat them. Now, for all the pressure they put on Falk, he still threw for 380 and 3 touchdowns with no picks. So plays are to be had. And last year when they played, same type of situation, in the running game, did not run well. I think only averaged 2 yards of carry other than the one Freeman broke and the one Benoit broke combined for 126 on those 2 carries of their 183 yards. So big plays are going to be had there. What I think is really going to help Oregon in this game, though, is that ASU's offense, not very good. You take away those 3 non-conference games against Texas Tech and New Mexico or State or something, or San Antonio something or whatever.
Yeah, Texas San remember. Antonio.
Yeah, they have not been very good on offense. Now, they did beat Cal. Okay, they did beat Cal. But, you know, their quarterback's banged up. He may or may not play. But then again, he's got 6 touchdown passes, 5 interceptions. So maybe you want him to play. So I don't think they're going to be under as much pressure to score as many points this week as they have been during the season. and I would expect them to win. If they do not win this game, they may not win the rest of the season, because this is, to me, other than Oregon State, the easiest shot for them to get a victory the rest of the season.
All right. Hey, good stuff as always. Enjoy the World Series. I'll see you Saturday. Catch his work, CSNNW.com, on Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress. AF, always a pleasure. Thanks, man.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Take it easy.